Oak Session number 13205, Reel 1.
Mr. Webster, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
Toru, Cornwall.
And that was in 1920?
1920, yes.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a bank messenger.
But you told me he was also in the Navy.
Yes, he was in the Navy for 25 years.
And did you go to a school in Cornwall?
Yes, I went to a... state school, and followed that up with a commercial education for a year.
In Truro?
In Truro, yes.
How did you come to be in the Navy?
Whilst my parents were on holiday, I spoke to an old pensioner in the post office, and he said, "The Navy's a job for you, boy." And I applied for the various papers on how to join. When my folks returned, I presented the papers to the old man, and he said, "Well, boy, you join, but as you make your bed, so you'll lie in it." So, of course, I joined the Navy.
Didn't he approve?
Yeah. It was hard to say whether my father ever approved or disapproved of anything. He was a very reticent kind of man. He wouldn't show his feelings then, put it that way.
Was it easy for you to get into the Navy?
Yes, no bother. I contacted the Toro representative and was given a travel warrant to Devonport and was interviewed with a view to my joining the RN.
This was in 36?
This was in 1936, yes.
Where did you do your training?
I commenced my training on the 17th of September 1936 on the Impregnable, which was a shore barracks in Devonport.
What was your training like?
The first 6 weeks were terrible. They had to knock us from being fat civilian boys into something approaching physical fitness that would meet with the Navy requirements. Now, I had the first 6 weeks in the Impregnable, and I say it without shame, there's many a night in the hammock with a strange smell of ropes that I gave a few little tears in the hammock, and I think most of the boys did.
In what way was it so terrible, though?
Well, inasmuch as it's terrible for any civilian that's been able to do what he wanted to do when he wanted to. With the Navy, we had to do what the Navy wanted in their time. It wasn't a harsh regime, but to a boy, it was. It was harsh. When I look back, the boy service was some of the finest times I had in the Navy were with the boy service. It wasn't a brutalised service, at least not for communication rates, nor was it for the seamen. It couldn't be compared to the training that these young soldiers get now. They are, to my mind, brutalised. We were never brutalised. In fact, we remained nice chaps.
Were you beaten at all?
Never, never. Although... No, I never heard of a beating at all. But mind you, the jankers, which were imposed, that was when You really asked for trouble. They were horrific to us. It meant that you were taken to the gym for an hour each day, according to the number of days you were under punishment, and the forms were turned upside down. You were then given a 303 rifle, which was raised above the head, and you had to frog leap over the stools. And after you'd done one round, you dropped your rifle and you were sent up the wall bars in the gym, up and down, until the instructor decided you'd had enough. Then you'd have another go at the frog humping around the gymnasium floor.
Did it ever happen to you?
Never. I saw lads that had it, and I vowed that I'd never get caught. And I think a lot of people should have been punished, but they were too cute. They never got caught.
Did you behave yourself during the boys' training?
Yes, yes. It was a good life. Plenty of sport. And there was no... We youngsters, it never dawned on our minds to do anything but conduct ourselves in a proper manner. I can't ever recall any boy doing anything ashore, such as smashing windows that we see now. There was nothing of that. And of course, drink didn't come in because we were underage in any case.
Do you think the initial training at Impregnable did you any good?
Oh yes, it was a moulding of a civilian mind into a service mind, preparatory to joining the main Navy.
Which branch of the service did you go into?
Now, I elected to, after 6 weeks initial training at the Impregnable, I elected to take up the career of communications, wireless operator.
Where did you go for that training?
The 26th of February, 1937, I was sent to HMS St. Vincent, Gosport, Hants, as a boy to leg of his second class.
What did you learn there?
All types of signalling, including semaphore, but most of our time being wireless operators was concentrated on transmitting, receiving, and plenty of book work. We were examined quite regularly, and we had to know the fleet signalling methods off by heart, also the routing of messages, etc. It was an 18-month course, and on completion you had the makings, although not the experience, of becoming a good wireless operator.
I think your pre-war service was in aircraft carriers.
On the 6th of May, on the 18th of March, 1938, I received my draft to Drake as an ordinary telegraphist. On the 6th of May, 1938, I joined HMS Furious, where I remained until the December of 38.
This was an aircraft carrier.
Quite correct. This is, at the time, we were based at Devonport, but we did several terms of duty running from Rosyth in Scotland. Our job was to train young pilots from Donnybristol in Scotland, and they were various, they were naval pilots and also Royal Marine pilots. At the time, piloting Swordfish, it was a very dodgy job for the pilots. Experiments were still being carried out with the Restor gear, and during our small commissions in Scotland, training commissions, I seem to remember that we lost quite a few pilots. They either crashed into the bridge on landing, or on taking off, didn't get the correct speed, and they ploughed into the water in front of the Furious, which was a 34,000 ton carrier. That was it. They weren't seen anymore. They just lost them. There were no ejector seats in the Swordfish. So really, when I look back, they were pretty brave men. Of course, they were young, and perhaps bravery didn't come in. They had the adrenaline to carry on with the job. From the Furious,
yes,
on the 14th of December 38, most of the Furious crew, which consisted of RMVRs of the 1418 war, were transferred to the Courageous.
How did that compare with the Furious, as far as you were concerned?
They were similar ships, and the routine was more or less the same. They were both laid down as battle cruisers, and they had a fair speed. For example, once when leaving Rosyth to return to Devonport, our base, the Furious did a working up trial followed by a high speed trial, and she knots 34 knots, which I remember quite vividly. So it showed that they had the speed, and of course they had to do the landings with the poor old Swordfish. They had to get the speed up to get them on board or for them to take off.
Were you in the Courageous when it was sunk?
No, I left the Courageous the 15th of May, 1939.
To do what?
And returned to the Furious. The old ship missed me, I think. On the 16th of May, 1939, and I remained with her until the 24th of August, 1939.
This was just before the outbreak of war?
Just before the outbreak of war, that's correct. And shortly after the outbreak of war, of course, we know that the Courageous was lost in the Western Approaches. Sunk by a U-boat, and I'm afraid to say that the majority of Devonport Division's RMVR men were lost on the Courageous. It was a virtual wipeout of the old RMVR men. And I did hear at the time that most of the casualties were caused by our own destroyers that went in and deck charged around the Courageous, thereby resulting in many men being killed in the water. I understand that from the Courageous experience, from then onward, submarines, or rather destroyers, were warned not to carry out attacks on submarines within the vicinity of the hit ship or sinking ship.
Whilst you were in the Courageous, did you notice anything about the lifeboats? Because there was the story that I heard that the lifeboats had been painted in such a way that they couldn't be launched when the Courageous was sunk.
No, I didn't notice anything of that. I know that, to be quite frank, now you mention it, there seemed to be very little abandoned ship drills. Probably this was because we were still at peace. And we had the bitter experiences of the next 6 years to realise that even the Navy had got slack. We weren't finely tuned as the German Navy was to commence a war.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Now I must carry on a bit from the 24th of August. On the 25th of August 1939, I joined the Shikari, HMS Shikari.
What kind of ship was she?
She was a destroyer, not of great tonnage. I would say in the 1,000-ton category. I remember the captain was a Lieutenant Commander Richardson. I joined her on the 8th of September, and looking back through my papers, Devonport Barracks never used to let me hang around long in there. Now I don't know why. Now then, the war was declared on the Sunday morning?
Yes.
3rd of
September.
September. Now on the Saturday evening, being a young blood, I had been ashore with several midshipmates. And routine when in harbour on the Shikari was good. We weren't worried, especially on a Sunday. And I remember that morning I had not put up my hammock the night before, but I'd slept on one of the mess deck tables. And I came to, and I was just in time to hear Chamberlain say that we were now at a state of war with Germany. We had been anticipating this after several crises that we had, preparedness, we were expecting it. But nevertheless, it sent a wave of shock through us youngsters that what we've been trained for, we were now going to put into action. And strangely enough, within 10 minutes of Chamberlain making his declaration of war, the air raid sirens went in Devonport, and I think that really struck home that, right, lads, we're in it.
Did the war declaration worry you?
No, No. So obviously apprehension. We didn't know what to expect. It was ignorance that worried us. What was it going to be like?
What kind of duties did the Shikari take up?
We commenced just prior to the war being declared. We used to do guard destroyer anchored off Drake's Island. And quite close to the declaration of war, one evening, I should imagine it was getting dark, and this huge liner went out the sound, and they informed me that it was the Normandy. She left. Whether she had passengers on board, I don't know. But she left just before war was declared. The Shikari was an escort destroyer, not heavily armed. Actually, she had 1 4-inch low-angle gun forward and 1 Lewis gun on the bridge. So really, we were in no state to meet a destroyer with any power on it. Our duties then started in Southampton waters. We had escort duties taking the BEF across the Cherbourg, the Harve, and on occasions Brest. During this stage, the Germans, apart from bombing on the mainland, they commenced dropping magnetic mines in Bristol coastal waters around ports. Now, Lieutenant Commander Richardson was an expert in magnetic mines. So we would take a convoy over to Brest, Cherbourg, or the other port, discharge them, and leave the merchant ships in harbour, and we would proceed back to Portsmouth. But we never went direct. Lieutenant Commander Richardson would always go back to Southampton waters and do a sweep for magnetic mines. I can't ever recall that we brought one up.
What work did the Shikari go on to next?
We were doing channel patrols. Strangely, we never contacted any submarine, let alone see one. I think at that time Gerry kept clear of the channel. But I know on one occasion we were returning from Le Havre and the ASDIC rating reported a contact. We pursued on the track and dropped a pattern of depth charges. No results apart from one. The ship's whaler was launched and we had fish on board for many days afterwards. But apart from that, we did normal patrols. E-boats were known to be in the channel, but we never met up with them. Perhaps it's just as well, because I understand that these German E-boats could do about 28 to 30 knots. Now, I should imagine the Shikari would be in the 22-knot range. But apart from that, the flotilla that we were with, I think it was the 16th DF, had an assortment of ships. To name a few, the Codrington, the Scimitar, the Scotsman, and two very oldies, the Rosemary and the Foxglove. Of the Foxglove, it was said that she could do 12 knots ahead and 14 knots astern. They were just really, well, they shouldn't have been on those duties, but they carried out their duties well. All went well. We were cramming France with the BEF, and then, of course, we had the spectacular advance of Hitler's armies through the Netherlands. And really, before we could gather ourselves, they were in France. During this time, the Shikari was operating from Plymouth. And I know at one stage we were getting these various ships from the countries that had fallen to the German attack. Polish, French, Dutch. And at one time it was suggested that at sunset the national anthems of the various ships that had been driven out their own ports were played. But I think it ran thin because there were so many that the time just wasn't devoted to it. Then we came to the crunch, Dunkirk. Every available destroyer in the 16th DF went to Dunkirk. I can only speak for the Shikari. We had approximately 10 days over there. I shall never forget the first morning we went into Dunkirk Harbour with a view to berthing alongside the one and only jetty. And as we went to take up our position, I looked over the side, and bearing in mind we were really raw young men who probably thought, oh, war.